Just got a tweet.
What's up?
31 thoughts, zero news.
Ooh, I wasn't supposed to send that to you.
Inside voice, inside voice, inside voice.
I was supposed to send that to PJ. Ah, shit. Patrick Kane, Chicago Blackhawks, 1,000 points. It's quite a weekend for Patrick Kane. His number retired in London. His junior hockey team played there one season on a line with Sam Gagne and Sergei Kostitsyn, then gets his 1,000th point, and the bench is empty.
Yes, and also there was the ceremony on Tuesday night in Chicago.
With Denny Savard at center ice.
With Denny Savard at center
real
ice.
Real nice touch.
Right before the Joel Quenneville tribute.
And right before Joel Quenneville's Florida Panthers took care of the Chicago Blackhawks. Nonetheless, Pat Kane, Elliot.
Well, I mean, obviously now the debate comes down. Who's the greatest American player ever?
I've always said Chelios.
I think it's the two of them.
I've always said Chelios. I may have a positional bias with defensemen, but Modano's in that conversation. I know that the career was shortened because of injuries, but you could put LaFontaine in that talk.
I think Kane now goes down as the greatest forward.
I'm not there yet, but by the time the career is over, I will be there.
Are you putting Modano ahead of Kane?
Right now, yes. But I know that Kane's gonna lap him.
To me, you know, he doesn't have the numbers yet that Modano had. The three cups, to me, that does it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Kane is already the greatest forward in U.S. history. He's passed Modano as the number one guy. But I don't know. I mean, I was a huge Blackhawks fan growing up. I love Chelios as a player. That's going to be a tough one for me for anyone to eclipse him. And people can say, well, Kane's a Blackhawk, so shouldn't you be okay with the bias? I think we're always biased to people we grew up watching.
The old saying is sports is best. Sports is at its best when you're 12 years old and you have a hard time letting that go.
100%. I completely agree with that. So I'm going with Kane right now as the greatest American-born forward ever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going still with Chelios as the greatest American player ever.
When's the last?
Narrowly edging out Roy Waters.
Shrimp. Nice call. When's the last time you went to the combine?
I can't because it's during the Stanley Cup final.
Oh, that's right. So the interesting thing about the combine.
Roy Waters was Canadian. I thought I was getting him because he played for the New York Americans, but I'm not as smart as I think I am.
Nor was I for not catching it. The interesting thing about the combine is talking to the players about whether, you know, it's family background, get, you know, biographical information for the draft. That's always interesting. The combine itself sometimes is interesting, but basically it's the same kind of stuff. I'm really interested year after year to see who the players say their main influences were growing up. And the last couple of seasons, this has sort of shifted, right? Once upon a time, it was, you know, that crew, the Jonathan Taves crew, that whole era was, they were all about Steve Yzerman. They were about Joe Sakic, grew up watching those guys. Last couple of years, most of the players, you know who they say? Pat Kane, the forwards. Pat Kane, Pat Kane, Pat Kane. Talk to Stan Bowman about this in Top Prospects.
How big of an influence, three cups with you guys in Chicago, most points in the decade. They're retiring his jersey in London, but what influence do you think he's truly had on the young players now, all growing up going, man, I grew up watching Patrick Kane.
It's funny, you know, interviewing guys at the draft, and one of the questions they always say is, yeah, he's the guy I emulated growing up. We had that last year with Kirby Doc and some other guys we've drafted, and they look up to him, and now they're teammates with him. So I think that's, it goes to show you how it kind of comes full circle. But the amazing thing about Patrick is just how he keeps getting better. It's unusual for players at the age of 30 to have their best year ever, but last year he was his best season, and this year he's on pace almost to pass that again. So he works so hard on his game, and I think, you know, he's an incredible talent, there's no question, but the amount of effort he puts in every summer, he comes back with a new wrinkle in his game, and he keeps getting better, so that's great for the Blackhawks.
And didn't it just feel like 5 minutes ago he was drafted?
Yes, and it tells you how old we're getting. By the way, he was asked about that. He did a scrum after the morning skate in Toronto on Saturday, and he was kind of asked about all of those players looking up to him, because he was specifically asked about Matthews, who does.
Yeah.
And he kind of laughed about it. He thought it was pretty funny. You know, the one thing about him is he's lost none of his I think this is some of the challenge sometimes, and I think it separates the great from the merely good, is that he's lost none of his passion. Like in terms of winning and getting better as a player, he seems never to drop off. He always seems to get better every year. I think also it can be harder when your team isn't going very well. You know, the Blackhawks, it's been a while since they've won a playoff round. They've missed playoffs. We're not used to that. And it hasn't decreased his will in any particular way. And I think young players really see that. I think there's less respect than ever for sort of like the older player in general and the older person in life. Mm-hmm. And I think they respect the fact that as he's got an age where you're supposed to drop off, he hasn't. He's still one of the league's most dangerous players. He also looks like he has fun. And that to this generation is huge.
The other thing about Pat Kane and influencing players, again, it's a small thing and you may look at it and shake your head at me as you normally do when I bring things like this up. You know what one of the best things that he did was, just from an influential point of view, listen, the playoffs and the championships and scoring, all of that, that is all wonderful. 1,000 points. Congratulations, Pat Kane. You know what one of the enduring legacies visually is going to be from Pat Kane for this generation? Deking out pucks. With the however many pucks it was, 100 pucks on the ice, just skating through them. Because the minute that video was released, I can assure you, and I know because my kids did it and every other kid that I know did it and still does it to this day. The minute that video was released, everybody tried to do it. It became a thing for kids all over, probably not just North America, but the world as well.
You know who I was the first guy I saw ever do that?
Who's that?
Was Michael Nylander.
Yeah, he was pretty skilled.
And it wasn't to that level because it was during a practice.
So you can say Alex Kovalev. That sounds like a Kovalev.
Well, Kovalev was great at the keep away. Like guys said, him and Datsyuk were two of the best. And Alfredson always said that when Kovalev was in Ottawa, he loved to play keep away against him because he was, you know, the best player. I think, as a matter of fact, Alfredson actually said that Kovalev cheated, which actually brought a new level of hilarity to the whole thing.
How do you cheat a keep
away? I can't. I know. I wrote it once. I'll see if I can find it. But I was at a Rangers skate once. I think it was when Tom Rennie was coaching. And Nylander was there. And he lined up probably about 12 to 15 pucks on one side. And he deked right through them. And it was pretty impressive. Yeah. And Darius Kasparaitis saw this. And he's like, oh, he gets like a big smile on his face. And he's like, I'm going to try this. And it wasn't even close. Like he sprayed all the pucks everywhere. And then he looked up at all the media guys watching and he was just laughing his head off. So Nylander was one of the first I saw who could do that really well.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about the moment with Pat Kane and the 1,000 points is the bench empty.
Aspects of keeping it alive. Kane down low. Saturday, touchdown. Joy, look at this. Only the 90th player in the history of the league to achieve 1,000 points. Only the fourth Blackhawk to ever do that. He joins the uncheckable check, the Golden Jet, and savoir-faire on a very short list. And here's the best thing about all of it for me. This is only 518 points at home. Almost as many points on the road as he's got at home. This is 518 at home. How about that? 482 on the road. Almost a perfect split.
And the fans here are so appreciative. Every time Kane got the puck tonight, Pat, you hear the fans kind of rumbling in anticipation, knowing that, hoping that it was going to happen. Well, it finally did, and they are part of history. And there's Brandon Saad picking up that 1,000-point puck. And the 21,000-plus still on their feet here at the United Center.
Boys, that was absolutely unreal. Obviously, getting 1,000 points, but having you guys come on the ice there and share it with me was a great moment. So you know, it's been fun here for a long time, and you know, you gotta love the way the team's playing. So let's keep it going. We got a lot of confidence right now, and let's keep the wins coming. But thank you for that special moment. I'll never forget it.
Now, the Chicago Blackhawks got special dispensation from the NHL, gave them the heads up. Hey, can we do this? Mm-hmm. Are we allowed? And the NHL said, yeah, absolutely. It's a momentous, you know, achievement. 1,000 points for someone. That's cool. Is that now a standard? Like, Joel Ryan Getzlaf is 40 points away from 1,000. Kopitar, Backstrom. Like, in the next couple of years, these guys are going to hit the 1,000-point mark. You have to empty the bench now.
I like it.
I like it too, but now is it going to become
well,
a thing?
Well, you always kind of have, right? Like, I remember when Sundin did it in Toronto, they emptied the bench.
Is it going to become what the rookie lap is now?
It should. I think it is. I think it happens. I bet you people listening to this will say, well, when this guy in my city or my favorite team scored his 1,000th point, the bench got off. And it should be like, sports is supposed to be fun. Like, to me, one of the biggest recent memories of just fun watching hockey was when Kovalchuk scored the overtime winner in Ottawa, and all those guys came off the bench to jump on him because they knew what the year was. One of the ones I remember was, I must have been in my early 20s when it happened, but I think it was Doug Gilmour scored his 1,000th point as a Maple Leaf, and I think they kicked Edmonton that night, if I remember correctly. And they got the 1,000th point, and it got taken away. I can't remember what it was, but it got disputed, high stick, whatever it was at that time, and it got taken. So they went out, they celebrated, the spotlights came on, then they're like, no goal, it doesn't count. And then, like, in his next shift, they scored again with him getting a point, and the spotlights went off again, the celebration came out again, and it counted.
Marchand was upended at the blue line. The play continued, though. Bookberger has him in front of the net, but it's deflected away to Sundin by Putman. Sundin with Andrechuk coming up. Gilmour on the play. It's centered. And slapped back off the boards to center to Bookberger. Bookberger coming in off the wing. Going for the net. But Putman put loose. And the long shot from the line is wide.
That one I remember really well. It was pretty funny.
You know what's going to happen with the Stanley Cup final one day?
I have to tell you that...
You know what's going to happen. It is going to happen one day.
If it didn't happen when Brett Hull scored against Buffalo,
yeah,
it's probably never going to happen.
No, you know there's going to be an offside review on a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I'm trying...
You know it's going to happen, Elliot.
I'm trying to... Because I know that's going to be a disaster. I'm trying to block out the idea that it could occur because I know I'm going to be sitting there the whole time while this review is going on.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be thinking, oh, this is so bad. This is so bad.
You're a Blackhawk fan growing up. You already mentioned Chris Chelios.
Yep.
Patrick Kane. Are those two the greatest Blackhawks ever?
I don't know. Like, Hull and Mikita.
I'd put Kane above them. Look, man, they had 1961.
Yeah, they won more. These guys have won more. There's no question about it.
Like, you go back and I remember 2010, I was working Hockey Night with you. I was doing the iDesk with Morrison. I remember that Stanley Cup final. I was doing Hockey Night radio. So Chicago's having their run. I go back and, you know, working at CBC, you have access to a lot of videos. And going back and, you know, listening to the various interviews the players have done after they win the Stanley Cup. And... You listen to Bobby Hull talk about he's talking about it in a way that there's the expectation that he's going to win a boatload of these things with this Blackhawks team. They never won it again.
Once again, the three stars are Ab McDonald, Tex Evans, and Bobby Hull. And here is Bobby. And Bobby, I'm going to let Ward Cornell step in and have a chat with you. Congratulations.
Thank you very kindly.
Thanks, Frank.
Well, that was a big one, eh, Bob?
No, it was tremendous. That's the first one, Ward.
What do you feel was the turning point in the series?
I think
the teams winning at home. I think each team winning their home games, and then this one, of course, us being able to win on the road.
Now, what do you think was the turning point tonight, Bob? Because you didn't have a good first period.
No, that's true, Ward. We came out very slowly, and the wings were tramping. I think when Reg Fleming scored that goal when we were shorthanded, I think that gave us
a
boost.
It a big...
And we came on from there.
Good. Well, thanks, Bob. I know WGN and Chicago wants to see you. And Rene, do you want to say something?
Well, I just want to say congratulations, Bobby. I know you have a lot of admirers in the province of Quebec. Now's the time to say hello to them. And I'm just being their interpreter. And I want to say you've had a wonderful series. Congratulations to you. And you should have a wonderful summer.
Thank you very kindly, Rene. And thank you very kindly, folks all over the world.
That was it. The Litzenberger Cup and then done. 61 and then over. Like, you can make the case right now that Pat Kane... the best Chicago Blackhawk ever.
Well, I think that's probably fair. More I think about it,
I would agree. It's an on-the-spot question, but
still. You know what? I'll tell you who else is higher on that list than he probably gets credit for.
Denny Savard?
Is Duncan Keith.
Yeah. Jonathan Taves' sparring partner.
Yeah. I really like Duncan Keith.
Same.
So... when he was younger, when he showed up at Michigan State as a freshman, and this is about 15, 16, this is about 18 years ago, actually, he scores a 71 on the VO2, which is an absurdly high number. Yeah. John Michael Lyles was a junior when he showed up, and he said it was just an absurd test. Like, Sean Horkoff was the guy who could get deep into level 6, which was the 60s, and Keith scored a 71. And so they were like, wow, that's an unheard of number. Kelly Rudy has always bragged about his VO2. Now Kelly brags about how much red wine and red meat he can eat. But back then he always bragged about his VO2.
Kelly was a good athlete and a good squash player.
Oh, Kelly, really good athlete. Someday I'm going to tell this. Have you ever heard the story about the basketball game at the 2007 Stanley Cup Final?
No.
Okay, we're going to talk about
this
story. All
right, park that one. We'll come back to it.
So Kelly scored, he says, top score was like a 67. So when he heard Keith scored a 71, he was like, that's unbelievable. So Keith, I thought he was 35, and someone asked him for me about it. And he says, by the way, tell him I'm not 35, I'm 36. Like, he wanted it to be known he was older. No concession for age, still with the oxygen for days. Incredible endurance, incredible VO2, you know, still beats many of the younger players in the tests. Still feels he can play forever. I think Keith on that list is of great Blackhawks is probably lower than he should be.
Don't disagree. On that, we'll begin the podcast. And congratulations to Pat Kane, 1,000 points. That is no small feat. 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by GMC Sierra Trucks. Okay, Elliot, so we opened up talking about Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks, and Chicago is one of those teams alongside the Montreal Canadiens, the New York Rangers, the Minnesota Wild, teams that will probably take the All-Star break, have a look under the hood, and figure out what they're all about in advance of trade deadline. What's up with the Hawks right now?
They are in the race. That was a tough one. Florida, the last game before the break. You want to have that one. And you knew it was going to be an emotional night, but they're very much in the race. And Stan Bowman, I saw some interviews he did recently where he kind of said, we're going to stay the course and see what we are. And you have to assume they're going to go for it if they're still in it. I don't know if they'll make any wild trades or anything, but they'll, as long as they're in the race, I think they're going to stay in it and they're not going to consider selling anything off or moving anything out. Like, I know there's been some interest in Brandon Saad. I heard that one of the things, though, is that the Blackhawks might have to retain a bit to maximize the value, and I think they'd consider it if it came to that.
But hang on, pause there, because they have room to do that, and they have room to weaponize cap space. Next year, DeHaan and Seabrook come back on the books, but right now...
they're in LTI. But they're not doing anything while they're in the race. The one that's interesting to me is I was watching it last night, like, Keith... he made it very clear last year when this question came up to him that he wasn't bailing and he wasn't going anywhere. But I do wonder, like, if Joel Quenneville sits there and says, is there a way I can
Duncan Keith over
get
here.
Get this guy to come to Southeast Florida. You know, he'll get a few percentage points on the state income tax if he goes from Illinois to Florida.
The Minnesota Wild, because he's already been traded twice, ever going to move Jason Zucker?
I do think Pittsburgh's laying the groundwork if they want to do that again. But Bill Guerin, from what I've heard, he's told people that while they're in the race and they've got a huge game on Wednesday night, they're playing one of the last games. They're playing actually the last game. Again, though, if they're still in it, I think they're going to go for the playoffs. Like, a lot of these teams aren't willing to concede until they're out, right? You've got tickets to sell. You've got to sell it to your room that you still believe you're in. Like, your players want a chance to go as long as they can. But I've had a couple of people who said to me that Minnesota-Pittsburgh-Zucker deal, it's still in the air. Like, they both know, Rutherford and Guerin, that it's there potentially if they want to do it. But the other one, too, I heard, you know, Dumba's name's been out there. I'm not convinced Guerin's doing that unless it's a huge return.
I was going to say, wouldn't a deal like that? I know he's not having the season that he was hoping to have. And last year before the injury, he was, you know, trending to have the best season of his career.
I think Guerin's well aware of that.
Listen, this is the player they protected in the expansion draft. Like, that's the one guy they said, okay, take prospects, you know, take Eric Halla, but don't touch Matt Dumba. There's a lot invested still in that blue liner.
There's a lot there. Like, I don't think they're looking to do that unless it's huge.
Montreal Canadiens. There's an interesting team.
Yeah.
They're on a little bit of an uptick right now, but you look at the standings and you say to yourself, there's a lot of teams they have to climb over, and there's still a lot of ground they need to make up to get back into the playoff picture.
It's really hard to see. The math is not their friend. I was told there'd be no math, but the math is not their friend. And I'll tell you this. I think one of the biggest decisions is going to be Petrie.
Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be a rental either. That's a player with another year on his contract. So that's a nice one.
And so, you know, in the notes I wrote that Peter DeBoer is a Brendan Dillon fan, and Brendan Dillon's going to be traded. So I was wondering if there was room for that move, but someone else said to me, you know, there's a Montreal guy used to work for Montreal, Vaughn Carpen, who now works for Vegas, and he said to me that he could see Vegas being interested in Petrie if he was available.
Vegas has been looking for another puck mover
for a long time. Like, they were hoping when Nate Schmidt came back, that would solve a lot of their problems. It hasn't done it. You know, Dillon and Petrie are very different players. And Dillon's a lefty. And don't forget that Bergevin and McCrimmon/McPhee have done deals already. They did Pacioretty together. So you always look for teams that are comfortable dealing each other. Someone said to me, do not be surprised if Petrie is available if Vegas is one of the teams looking there. The other one, too, about Montreal is Domi's contract talks. That's a big one for them.
We talked about this last week on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. What's happening with that?
I think it's been quiet. You know, he got benched that game.
In the doghouse, out of the doghouse.
Well, the one thing I heard, and we did this on Saturday night. So Domi had a 2-week stretch in. He hasn't taken a lot of penalties this year, but he had a 2-week stretch in November where he took about 3 or 4 retaliatory penalties, and they cost Montreal in a couple of those games. And I heard they went to him and they said, you know, Max, you can't do that. And to his credit, he took it out. But then that one against Chicago, it was the second one in a couple of weeks.
And that was on a power play.
Yeah, and Julian sent the message. So, again, he played regularly after that. I think Montreal likes Domi. I think they recognize he's great for the stage. I think he loves it there. But, you know, contract talks aren't easy. So, you know, I've had some people say to me, you know, just watch what goes on there. I don't think it's a crisis point or a red alert or anything like that at this time. But, you know, I think Montreal's got to look at the future, and Domi obviously has got to look at his future too.
We know what the future of the New York Rangers is going to look like. We're seeing a lot of those players at pretty much every single position, and it's pretty exciting. Tough injury to Artemi Panarin. Chris Kreider takes his place at the All-Star game, but the Rangers are one of those teams that you include in that collage of the Hawks and the Wild and the Habs as taking stock of what's there and what we do next.
Well, I think with the Rangers, it's that, You know, they were getting into the race, and then they lost to Columbus and they lost the Islanders going in, but they have the back to back with Detroit coming out of it. And I think they always kind of looked at that and said, we'll see where we are after that. I feel bad for poor Chris Kreider. He gets to go to the All-Star game, and I was going to get barraged with, are you going to be traded?
Be moving,
are you going to be traded?
It's going to be the last time wearing a Rangers jersey.
Yeah, I like Kreider a lot, and there's no question a lot of other people do too.
Would they extend him? Like, we're just assuming he's going to be done.
I think it's possible. You know, the thing is, you look at them and look at their cap situation. You've got Zibanejad after next year, and all of a sudden, you know, he's a hugely improved player. And the other thing about Zibanejad that's interesting is, you can't really predict what's going to happen in his talks. He's represented by his brother, so it's a bit of a different wild card. Like, that's different. It's unique. And all of a sudden, like, Anthony DeAngelo, he's got a big-time arb case. A big-time arb case. So all of a sudden, if you're the Rangers, you've gone from, you know, tearing it down. You add Panarin, who's been absolutely worth the money. And you've got to look at Zibanejad, who's going to be absolutely worth the money. What you're going to do with DeAngelo and now Kreider, like, you've got a lot of things here you have to deal with. So I think the question is, you know, how they prioritize him. I think they will try to sign him, but where do they prioritize him and all of that, knowing Lundqvist comes off the cap after next year?
Yeah, do you have any idea how the goaltending is going to shake out? I know everybody always says the right things about trying to make it work with three goaltenders, and then when it doesn't work, everyone says, well, we were skeptical and we knew this was, you know, a doomed plan from day one, but we made the best of it. How does this carousel sort itself out? Because from what I understand, if they're going to move Georgiev, it's going to be a huge return.
Well, they want a big return. I mean, we've talked about it. They're listening on them. I have some teams who said to me that they still think the Rangers prefer to keep them. Like, they have a bit of a dance here they got to do for another year and a half. Kravtsov went home, now he's back. Anderson went home, now he's skating again. They don't want a problem with Shestorkin. I think they're not dealing him unless they get blown off their feet. Because these might be their goalies in 2 years. The other thing, too, is the Rangers don't have an expansion problem. They don't have to worry about that. They're confident of their situation. But a team that acquires them might. So nobody wants to trade themselves into an expansion problem. That's a slight hurdle for them. Not a huge one, but a slight one.
On headlines on the weekend, you guys talked once again about the Zach Cassian deal. Is there a chance that this will be removed from the podcast because by the time it is released, the deal will be done? Are we that close?
Not necessarily. Like, someone said to me, it's not done until it's done. There's a will on both sides. But it's not done until it's done. I think the Oilers are going to look at some of their other depth players too, like Josh Archibald. I went down a YouTube rabbit hole. Josh Archibald's dad, Jim, played with Dave Tippett at North Dakota. I didn't know that. 1982 brawl. His dad was right in the middle of it. Like, the commentary says that Jim Archibald's injured, and then he comes charging back out of the hallway to pound someone.
And we've got a few things happening. Oh, they're going nuts. Archibald's getting after some guy up in the stands there as we had a rhubarb starting. And the fans are starting to boo it. Kerry Eads, we did see as we went away for the break, Kerry Eads went right into that Wisconsin box. And there they are trying to break it up there.
Dustin Carroll and Archibald are down the hall going after a couple of guys.
I think Archibald is hurt. As we'll look down, if we can get a shot at the cave there, I think Archibald's hurt. And look at this. Look at this. Archibald's coming after him now.
He threw a bit of a sucker punch there. They're really
going to I don't know what's going on here or how it started, but there was a lot of things going on here.
They're all in it. The police are coming in there now.
You betcha.
This all started very innocently, too, Ed.
Yes, it sure did.
That is really something.
Old school hockey. Old school hockey.
Eddie Shore.
Toe Blake. I was interested, because I'm interested in everything involving this Andrei Svechnikov goal. I was interested in your note in the blog about how the NHL is sending out memos to officials reminding them that the stick needs to stay below the crossbar.
When you score.
When you score.
Below the shoulders when you have the puck.
Correct. Is there anything, or has there been anything sent out about hitting the goalie in the face?
I have not heard that.
That's what I would be really curious about. Because to me, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, you come around the net, you know, you scoop the puck up, you try to throw it in. Either you do or you don't, and your stick clips the goaltender's face. How's that not a penalty?
Well, it's a follow-through, right? That's the way I looked at it. You know what? I meant to look into this. Thanks for reminding me that I forgot and I'm lazy, so I will look into this. But I just assume it's a follow-through, but I will check to make sure I'm right.
Speaking of sticks, the new Bauer Nexus, the ADV, raising eyebrows. So I was in Hamilton last Thursday for the CHL-NHL Top Prospects game. And there was one out in the hallway. That was Alexis Lafreniere's.
And by the way, I want to say a thank you to a tweeter named Jordan Henry.
Okay.
At Jor Henry, because after I published the blog with the one incident, Jake DeBrusk, he sent me a direct message with a photo of Lafreniere's, the one you saw.
Right. So outside of optically, it looks different. This one's already caused a pretty big stir, certainly amongst gear geeks. Like me. I think you're one too.
I'm not like you, but I'm learning.
You're curious
more.
About
I'm
it.
Always curious about the tools of the craft.
So I
right?
spoke to someone at Bauer last week at the game, and we were talking about the advantages of it. And I said, you know, I haven't used a wood hockey stick in a long time, but every now and then when I pick up a wood hockey stick, the one thing I love about it is how soft passes feel. That feeling is mm-hmm. gone.
Mm-hmm.
You can't shoot as hard with the wood hockey stick. It weighs 1 million pounds. The reasons why players are using the technology they use now is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that composite sticks still can't replicate is the feeling of getting a hard pass on a wooden stick, because it cradles. It feels so good.
Mm-hmm.
And the person I was talking to said, it's not exactly like a wood hockey stick in feel, but that is one of the advantages of this stick through their testing so far and what the players have come back with as far as feedback goes.
Well, we're going to learn at the All-Star game this weekend, because I have a feeling it's going to be part of the All-Star weekend.
That stick?
Yes.
Who's using it?
Well, that's the rumor is, and that's what several people have tweeted at me and told me, is that the true unveiling was supposed to be this weekend. So we'll find out. Now, Braden Schenn was the first one to use it in a game, and I believe Jake DeBrusk is the first one to score. Now, again, I'd like to thank a tweeter who sent that to me. That was Trent Leaf, Trent L14. He was the one who sent it to me, and I checked with Louie. So Jake DeBrusk had a 2-goal game against Winnipeg, and he switched to that stick. And I'm like, who changes a stick after scoring 2 goals? But he went to a camp, and you mentioned Svechnikov. I guess it was a Bauer camp in the summer. Svechnikov was there. Noah Hanifin was there. The Hughes brothers were there. Lafreniere was there.
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
DeBrusk tried it and liked it. So it came available to him. He switched after scoring 2 goals, scored in his first game against the Islanders, and scored the tying goal against Vegas 2 nights ago.
A lock out of the goal. Coiled to DeBrusk. He scored! Jake DeBrusk lights the lamp. 9 points in 8 games for Jake DeBrusk.
He's been around it all night, Jack. The power play, he had a chance at the top of the blue paint. He had a play in the middle, had a break in earlier.
And Louis said that Jake really likes it.
It really is.
Like, he really likes it.
David Pastrnak at that camp? Is that a name?
No, David Pastrnak was not at that one.
He's a Bauer guy, but I can't imagine, considering the season he's having, that he would change anything about anything.
I think a lot of these guys are CAA guys, too. So let's see who it was. The names I got: Dubois, Hanifin, Lafreniere, Svechnikov, and the Hughes brothers.
Okay, but
there could have been more, but those are the ones I have.
Okay, so we'll see what happens with that stick. All you gear geeks, pay attention to the All-Star game this weekend in St. Louis. Peter DeBoer and the differences with the Vegas Golden Knights. By the way, congratulations, Nick Hague, his first career NHL goal,
mm-hmm.
Tuesday night against the Boston Bruins. Did you notice how he scored it?
With his bomb?
Yes. Do you know where the bomb went?
No, I didn't. I don't remember off the top of my head.
We talked about this last year. So his junior coach is James Richmond.
Yeah.
Mississauga Steelheads.
Yes.
Who, when his career was finished, was over to Four Nations and noticed this young Swedish defenseman, John Klingberg, firing in shots high from the point. And Richmond has been waiting as a head coach in Mississauga Steelheads to find a defenseman who could do similar. And Haig scored a ton of goals in junior hockey, doing what defensemen are told never to do, shoot the puck high. It's right from John Klingberg.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, or Tuesday night rather, Nick Haig scores with a bomb from the point, past Yaroslav Halak, high.
Well, the thing is, like,
thought of James Richmond when I saw the goal.
There you go. First of all, congratulations, James. Secondly, though, you know what this is going to lead to is, right now, what's analytics all about is finding the market inefficiency, right?
Correct.
No one shoots high.
Defenseman knew that's always a no. Keep it down for tips. Keep it down for tips.
So you know what's going to happen is, well, the new inefficiency is shooting high, so people are going to start doing it again.
Oh, great. So everyone's going to get injured standing in front of the net. Yeah. Fantastic. Differences in Vegas with the new coach.
Well, you know, I think the thing that everybody noticed, and, you know, I wanted to thank the guys from Ken from Sinbin Vegas who helped me with this. You know, DeBoer said short shifts. The forwards under Gallant were tied with Washington for longest shifts in the league, 49 seconds average, and they're down about 5 seconds. So he did it. Someone else said to me that there's a change with the penalty kill. Another coach just texted me this morning, said there's a change with the penalty kill too. And, you know, there's no question. We talked about Vegas has been looking for D. They asked Gallant to change from a man-to-man D to a zone, and you know, DeBoer obviously is a lot more comfortable than that. I mean, I think people are still stunned about this change, and Gallant's going to be unemployed as long as he wants to be. But, you know, I still look at Vegas. They won their first game against Ottawa. They got a miracle point out of Montreal. The Canadiens blew that game late, and although they won it in the shootout.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they lost last night in Boston. They had a lead, and that one's going to leave a sour taste going into the break. I mean, it's just off there is the answer, Jeff, because you look at them on paper, they should be number one in the Pacific Division. To me, on paper, they're the best team in the Pacific Division, and they're in the second wild card right now. That Pacific is going to be unbelievable to finish the year, which is good for us because it's good for our second game Saturday night ratings.
You can make the case for everybody in the Pacific either being in or out of the playoffs. Like, would you be surprised with if anybody either made it in or out?
No. I mean, I would be surprised if Vegas missed. I would be. I just think they're too good. And I'm a big Fleury guy. I really am. Now, I want to close because we're running out of time. You and I have Wednesday night responsibilities,
too.
Is there anything else you really wanted to get to?
I want to get your thoughts on Wes McCauley on Saturday.
All right, there's Brady Tkachuk. This is his fourth game against his brother. As they talked about off the top, the entire Tkachuk clan is in for this one, including Mom Chantel, Dad Keith, as we're set to go in Ottawa. The two Tkachuk brothers line up against each other. Not for long, though, because waved out of the circle was Artem Anisimov, so Brady has to step in and take the draw, and so does Matthew. There you go.
I think that was great.
Hang on a second. Okay. Yes. I think it was great too. I am a fan. Mm-hmm. You thought it was great. You're watching, you know, you're working Hockey Night in Canada. Everybody watching thought it was great. The parents thought it was great.
We should explain. They had the Tkachuk brothers called in to take the draw.
Anisimov and Lindholm get kicked out. Where Wes McCauley calls the two brothers in, says, hey, your mom will love it if you see you guys take the face off. Everybody loves it. You know what I thought of?
What?
So you try to have like a 360 look at all this. Okay, who's impressed with this and who's not?
Mm-hmm.
If you're the coaches, how do you feel about that?
Why would you have a problem? Let me come back at you with the question. Why would you have a problem?
Because that's not the lineup you said. Is all of a sudden, is the referee now setting your lineup?
Oh, like seriously,
Wes,
who thought of that?
Wes, who can
Please
I put out on the power
play? Please
tell
me that you thought of that and nobody sent
that
to
you.
My
first thought is, it's wonderful and it's great. But then with every single issue, I try to do, okay, from everybody's perspective.
You're overthinking this.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I don't think I am.
Yeah, I think you are.
Stephen Walken like this?
You know what? Like, who cares? Like, it's fun.
Who cares? I get that it's fun. It's also a professional hockey game and the referee is
How does this change a professional hockey game?
I'm just saying.
Tell me, like, how does this change a professional hockey game?
How does it change a professional hockey game? Your coaches set the starting lineup. We want these two guys to take the draw. And the referee's saying, no.
Can we get like a fun police sound effect?
The referee is saying, no, I'm setting the lineup, not you. Sorry, coach, stand down.
Oh, come on.
I would have loved it if it was Ottawa playing Columbus and one of the Tkachuk brothers was playing on the Blue Jackets. Just to hear the John Tortorella press conference after.
I guarantee
about how a referee
not
set,
even
how a referee
Tortorella
set his starting lineup.
With that.
You don't think so?
No.
Every single person involved in that game hockey looked at that and said, that's cool.
Because Tortorella is a big-time family man, so he wouldn't have a problem with
I understand that. But you don't think if some coach would look at that and say, what, are you going to set my PK too?
Only a coach whose opinion I don't care about on this issue.
Okay, that's it. I just wanted to get that in. I want to see if you would bite on that one.
We have to go, but I want to end because I referenced the basketball game.
Yes.
Okay.
You want to do this now?
Yeah, let's just get this done in the podcast. So 2007 Stanley Cup Final, Anaheim versus Ottawa. At our hotel in Anaheim, there was a basketball court. I can't remember who was talking a big game. I really hope it wasn't me. I don't remember. I really hope it wasn't me. It's possible I was, but I don't think so. The people will remember. But we had a 3-on-3 basketball game. It was me. The producers of Hockey Night in Canada on Saturdays, Brian Spear, and another Hockey Night producer at the time, Mike Dodson, against Kelly Rudy, Greg Millen, and Joel Darling, who was the executive producer of Hockey Night at the time and still has a major role here.
It's my exec on ice surfing.
And basically, you're exec on ice surfing. Yeah. Also, he's the executive producer of the All-Star Game, for example. And I think Hockey Day in Canada, too. So Mike, Brian, and I were younger than Joel, Greg and Kelly, and we thought we were going to do okay against them. Yeah. Now, I'm going to say right out that I played terrible. Okay. I was bad. Dodson was useless.
I was Dottie.
He was useless. Spearsy was our best player.
He's tall.
Yeah. But, he played well. Dodson and I are not short, but we were garbage. Dodson's son, by the way, is apparently a really good basketball player. Huh? But it must have come from some other part of the family. We got murdered. And you know what it was a reminder of? Like, Millsy, NHL goalie.
Yeah.
Rudy, NHL goalie. And at that time, people always used to joke that goalies weren't athletes.
Who do you call the people that athletes hang out with? Goalies.
Yeah.
There's a joke.
But those guys were unbelievable. And the thing that really stunned me about it was they barely even moved in terms of, but they let the ball do all the work.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst athletic schoolings I've ever received. You know, like,
come on, old man, let's go.
Like Joel's tall, the tallest one there. And all he did was foul everybody. Like, and we weren't calling it. It was prison rules, right? Like Jim Carrey and Cable Guy. But Millsy and Rudy, man, did they kick our ass. Like, they absolutely schooled us. And Kelly would just smile about it. Millsy, he stuck the knife in.
Loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Stuck it, twisted it.
He had this. Kelly just smiled, and he went on to the next play. Millsy, for years, stuck the knife in. But I have never forgotten. I can't remember how this came up. But I have never forgotten that basketball court ass kicking, because it was maybe the worst one I ever received, and I received some over the years.
These guys were athletes.
Yes.
That doesn't go away.
The only one that ever bothered me once as much as I was playing golf for money once against Pierre LeBrun, and we were tied with like 5 holes to go, and I collapsed and he beat me by like 9 shots. Oh. That's the only other one I've ever been as pissed off as I was.
How much lighter were you in the wallet after?
Probably
that?
About $100.
I just pulled it off the tree in the Friedman backyard. Not a problem.
That's right.
Speaking of ex-athletes, we will hear from someone who looks like he can still play these days. Jeez, he's torn up like a bad report card. Gary Roberts joins 31 Thoughts, the podcast, in moments.
Okay, Oilers fans, brace yourselves for what you're about to see.
Here comes McDavid. McDavid flying in, and he crashes into the Flames net. Tripping is the call. That was quite the collision.
That's a whole lot of speed going into the goaltender there.
And Smith is called for...
Oh, I think it's Connor.
Yeah, no, he's called for a trainer to come in and help Connor.
Yeah, he's holding that leg. He went in really hard. I mean, you're going that fast and you get taken down. There's nowhere you can go, and jams right through the bar. And Connor McDavid's a tough customer. You've only seen him ever stay down once in his career, I believe. And he jumped back up after that and got himself off the ice. This time, though, he didn't move. He stayed down and knew there was something wrong right away, and he's grabbing that left leg, and TD Forz is out there right now holding onto that leg. This doesn't look good.
Superstar stayed down on the ice for several minutes. You could kind of lip read with McDavid saying he thinks it's broken. The good news now, Oilers tweeted that x-rays were negative. He will have an MRI in Edmonton.
You're going between anger and rage and you're heartbroken for the guy. And so to get some good news right now, we can breathe for a few hours, but MRI tells you everything. So we'll hopefully get through the MRI, but we're not out of the woods yet. But it's a decent first step. It could have been a lot worse.
Okay, Elliot, we all remember it was April 6th. It was the Battle of Alberta, Edmonton versus Calgary. Connor McDavid leaves the game with a severe leg injury. Everybody holds their breath and assumes it will be surgery. But his team chooses rehab instead. This is the focus of something you'll watch after the skills competition on Friday and before the All-Star game on Saturday. On Sportsnet, it is called Whatever It Takes. This is all about how Connor McDavid got himself back into the NHL after that injury.
You know, I'll never forget, Jeff, watching that game when the camera zooms in on McDavid and he's like, I think it's broken. You know, you knew that was the Oilers' last game of the season, but still, I think as a hockey fan,
yep,
there's a sick feeling in the pit of your stomach when I still remember how gross it felt when I saw him whisper those words. And in the trailer, which is really interesting, McDavid admits that he waited until he got out of view and he was in the hallway before he broke down. He called himself a mess. They got three opinions on this. And it was the second opinion where they told them that this could be a lot worse than you originally believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other opinions that said, you know, you don't necessarily have to do surgery. And in the interview, Gary Roberts, and when he talks about Connor McDavid's tissue and how it responds well to treatment, I think that's the best way for all of you to understand why they opted for rehab instead of surgery. But Gary Roberts wanted to make it very clear, and he says it once in the interview, this is not about me, but he said that what he's trying to do and what Connor McDavid's legacy of this may be is telling teams that, you know, if you're sending your athlete away for the summer or they're going home for the summer, you have to trust people around them, like himself, to have a team that will make sure your player is to come back ready to play. That's what Gary Roberts is trying to say here, that Connor McDavid is surrounded by people like Dr. Mark Lindsay, who is one of the great trusted people by athletes for his work in chiropractor and with soft tissue. Mike Priebeg, who's not interviewed in the piece, he's another guy. Lawson Hamer, who's a longtime gymnastics coach who did some gymnastics works with McDavid to get his body back to moving properly. Tracy Wilson, a great Canadian figure skater, the first ever to win an ice dancing Olympic medal with the late Rob McCall. She was with him on the ice. Like, all these people together were a team that helped make sure Connor McDavid was ready to play. And the interview's really good. You conducted it with me. I hope you feel the same way. But I think that's what Roberts is trying to say, is that you have to trust your players to a team of people, and he believes very strongly in his group, that can say, whatever's ailing him, we're going to get him ready for the next year.
There's a lot of really good information here that Gary Roberts shares. Hope you enjoy listening to it as much as Elliot and I enjoy doing it with Gary Roberts. Here's a former NHLer on the rehabilitation of Connor McDavid. Pleased to be joined now on 31 Thoughts, the podcast, by former NHLer and the man who makes players healthy and strong. We all know the career. We all know the post-career work of Gary Roberts. He joins us now. Gary, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
Good, guys. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well. Whatever it takes. Now, we've only seen the trailer, but it looks fascinating. You've seen the whole thing. You were part of it. You were part of the rehabilitation that Connor McDavid went through. What are we about to see in this feature?
I'm not allowed to share any of that. Don't you guys know that stuff? I'll listen. where do I start? Like, this is, you know, how much time do you guys have? I'd say number one, for me, dealing with it from the beginning and the emotions that were tied to it, I would say, it's a pretty remarkable story, obviously, what Connor accomplished in a very short period of time when even us who were with him on a daily basis, you know, we had our doubts and we had our fears as he did. And I would say, as far as life after hockey for me, this past summer, with also running the business for 100 athletes, and then you throw in Connor McDavid's rehabilitation, and all of a sudden you've got no time. Everybody says, why didn't you play golf last summer? Well, I was really busy. And, you know, I'm a member at Copland in Uxbridge. I love the golf course. They maybe saw me four times this summer on top of, you know, Connor's situation and all the guys. And you got to be respectful. You know, other players would say to me, well, holy crap, is, you know, what about me? You know, Connor's getting all the love this year. And I point to all my guys is, listen, if you're in this situation, we're doing the same for you. I mean, that's what we're all about. That's why I do what I do. Life after hockey is giving players the best care. Whether you're a healthy young guy or an injured guy, whatever it takes, I believe we have a team that can help players be healthy, perform at a high level, and play for a long time. And obviously at 22 years old, Connor went through the biggest challenge of his early career. And, you know, I would say to everybody, you don't go through your career without challenges like this. This was extreme. But if you look at another athlete that I've spent tons of time with over the years, you look at Steve Stamkos, what he went through, right? And he's now been in the league 11 years. But he's had his challenges along the way and has come out on the other side and still having great success at the NHL level. So no one goes without challenges. We all get hit with challenges at different times in our career and different situations, different scenarios. And, of course, Connor's was a very sensitive one this past summer.
So, Gary, can you just take us through? So he says he's scheduled for surgery, and all of a sudden, who makes the suggestion that why don't we try rehab instead?
Well, I think, you know, I'm not here to, or on this thing, to take credit for anything. It's really not about me. It's about Connor and his family. And if you talk to the therapist, if you talk to Athletes Care, Dr. Mike Drebeck, who spent so much time with Connor over the years and making sure he's recovering and healthy, and Dr. Mark Lindsay, who eventually took over when he came to the picture and did a lot of, you know, did so much for Connor. When you talk to these specialists that their hands are on the top athletes in the world on a regular basis, when they tell you and they tell me, wow, this guy's tissue is amazing. It's like butter. He responds so well to treatment. He's so hydrated. His nervous system is always ready to go. And that has been the explanation to me over the years. Remember, like, we've been with Connor since he was 15 years old, right? Connor was never a big fan of treatment. He didn't like treatment early in his career. And, you know, he's learned to realize and recognize the importance of it. But when these therapists tell you, this guy responds so well each and every day to treatment and recovery and is able to perform at a high level every day. So Connor came to me and said, like, and to Dr. Priebig and said, like, if my tissue is that good and I recover that well, then why can't I rehab this?
Hmm.
And, you know, Connor had heard, you know, he'd had many opinions. It wasn't just one opinion. Obviously, the gentleman that offered the opinion of him needing surgery or his career's in jeopardy, that opinion, he trained a few others under him that said, possibly you could rehab this. You know, Dr. Mark Lindsay, who, you know, I'll go back, this isn't about my career, but the experience, what I went through with Dr. Mark Lindsay reached out to me and to Lorden Goldenberg, my strength coach at the time. I don't think Gary's done. You know, I think this new technique, active release techniques, I think we can relieve the issues in his neck, and I think he can go back to play. That was Dr. Mark Lindsay. I was 30 years old, and my career was over. Right? So we're going 23 years later, I have been involved with Dr. Mark Lindsay and Dr. Prebeg and, you know, amazing, amazing experts in this field who have rehabbed and helped so many players. And Mark Lindsay is still part of this equation because of how good he is. And Dr. Prebeck's still part of this equation. And this is what I've built my whole philosophy and my program on. It's integrating the fueling, the training, and the recovery to achieve high performance. Whether you're preparing to play for the season or whether you're rehabbing from an injury or you're returning to play, the main pillars of my philosophy have to support all of that. And I think that's what Connor, he did. He took all this information he's gathered since he was 15 years old and he applied it to his rehabilitation of his knee, and he's got youth on his side, right? So no one had a cut into his knee, and he's 22 years old. He responds amazing to treatment and to therapy and made a miraculous recovery and comeback. As you see him perform day in and day out, we are so lucky to have been part of this thing with Connor. It has made my team of experts behind the scenes, it's made us better. He did the work, right? He had the guidance, he had the information, he had the tools. But in the end, it's Connor McDavid did the work.
Hmm. You know, Gary, I'm curious, along this path, there has to be a number of hurdles and a number of benchmarks. And when Connor McDavid says, it's my goal to get to training camp, I'm sure there was some skepticism from some people. At what point during the rehab, Gary, did you and your team say, I think he's going to make it?
When he told me he was going to Edmonton and possibly apparently in training camp, I was in a tough situation, right? Like, I want to say, that's great, Connor, but it's not necessary, right? That's what I wanted to say to him. And it's not necessary to do that. We saw how great he was doing. Then he started to skate, right? We had Sean Allaird in, who's a skills coach with the Colorado Avalanche. He came in and ran some sessions for our pro players, did an amazing job. Connor was out there. I'd be watching those guys skate in the morning or on the ice watching, and I'd be looking at him, shaking my head. No, you're not ready for that. No, you're not ready for that. And he'd just smile and do it. And I'd be nervous as heck, because the last thing, right, you got to recognize is how much stress there was on our team, knowing that the Edmonton Oilers, who were awesome through this, and Ken Holland flew in and basically signed off on us doing this. It was all those people that were attached to this, and the emotions and the trust. And I was obviously feeling like this isn't the time to hurt this thing, is August when he's on the ice, right? He's back on the ice, he's skating. And he truly, you know what, he didn't really say it till the end, but, you know, we truly thought our team that if he was back in January, that was going to be awesome. And even whether you talk to the radiologist, Dr. Anthony Mash, or you talk to Mark Lindsay, I would say none of us expected Connor McDavid to be back in September. And deep down, that was his goal. I would not say, you know, to many people, I don't think he shared that goal. Obviously, that's what he wanted, and he didn't want to miss any time. But to rehab this and to deal with all the emotions, all the stress around, you know, the fear of your career being over, and from April to September to do what he did, you know, he's an amazing human being. That's both his character and his skill and his resiliency.
I have two final questions, Gary, and the first one's tied into that. The word toughness, in a lot of ways, is associated with, can you win a fight? Can you punch somebody in the face? But I believe true toughness is, can you grind? When life throws you a challenge, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, your family, can you grind through that challenge? And I think what we've learned about Connor McDavid is he is one tough SOB.
100%. There's a lot of measurements of toughness. And I always say to the guy, listen, you're going to have challenges along the way. It's how you come out on the other side that eventually defines you as an athlete and a person. And you look, like you mentioned Stamkos, you look at all the guys that have gone through that and come back and played in the NHL at a very tough time to be an elite player. It's not easy to be an elite player. You look at Crosby, what he's going through. I mean, these guys are great. And I had the opportunity to play with Crosby. I had the opportunity to play with Stamkos, and I had the opportunity to be a big part of Connor's development in his career. But we've learned so much, and I've learned so much from being around these amazing athletes. And it's helped me provide a service for players that I believe is, it's the best information and the best opportunity for those players to become the best they can be, the healthiest they can be, and have a chance to play it for a very long time.
Is there any concern at all from a knee health standpoint that there will be any long-term ramifications from not having the surgery?
I believe, and Connor believes, and I think we all believe it, you know, for, and I mean, look, guys, like, he's a 22-year-old athlete, like hockey player. This isn't his last injury, right? But the status of his knee, we really believed and believe today that he got out of it unscathed. I truly don't believe, and if you watch the way he skates and the way that he moves and his comfort lever out there now, you could see in the first month and two, if you guys watch closely, he had some hesitations. He had some hesitations into what areas of the ice he went into, how fast he went into those areas, how he came out of his turns. So watching him, you can see that. I don't see that anymore. And proof is some of the goals he's scored recently and what he's had to do to score those goals and how he's had to turn on that knee to turn defensemen inside and out. Like, he's healthy, 100% healthy, and I knock on wood, of course, and pray that nothing ever happens to that knee, but he has come out of it 100% in our eyes. And I think from what he's gone through, all the areas of his fitness and training that might have been areas that we needed to work on, it gave us an opportunity to work on those areas while he rehabbed his knee. So in true fact, we believe he's a fitter, stronger athlete today than he was before the injury.
We'll finish up with this question, Gary, and we thank you for your time. You mentioned you've known and worked with Connor going back to when he's 15 years old. What have you learned about Connor McDavid in that time that you've been working with him? What should we all know about Connor?
I would say his drive, his determination to be the best player in the world. I mean, he truly never showed it because he was very shy and almost embarrassed around, you know, his peers because he was so good. His commitment over the years, his resiliency that you've seen in this last year and through his collarbone injury are at the top of the list. And, you know, when I call Connor and say, hey, man, do you mind bringing those photos that we need for the golf tournament in July, and end of July, because the golf tournament's coming up? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, where are you right now? He's like, I'm just in my garage working on my shot. And it's 80 plus outside, right? It's in his garage and he's shooting pucks. And I said, what? I said, go outside, buddy. It's the end of July. I said, just relax, man. And he's like, no, I don't like my shot. I got to get my shot. My shot's got to get better. So when you hear that story and everybody kind of chuckles about it, but the truth of the matter is, that is Connor McDavid. Middle of the summer, end of July, he's in his garage shooting pucks because he doesn't like his shot. When he said that to me, I'm like, buddy, you're on a different level. Like, I thought I was crazy. You're crazy. You're crazy. You're crazy in another way. But that's why people want to be around him. That's why young athletes, young hockey players learn so much from being around him. That's what the summer program gives players around the league that come back to us. They watch the best player in the world prepare to play. And when they saw what he did this summer, it's a whole new level.
Let me ask, because we talk so much about what Connor McDavid does right and all the things that you like about Connor McDavid, all the things that are inspiring about Connor McDavid. Gary, we know that nutrition is a huge part of your program. Is there one thing that Connor McDavid eats that Gary Roberts wish he didn't eat?
I would say he probably does. I talked to those guys the other day, and I think he was hiding some snacks behind his back, and I was trying to figure out what he had. They had me on FaceTime the other day, calling me from a little 3-day trip they took, and I'm like, wonder what he's hiding behind his back. So if he eats something, I'm sure he eats something I wouldn't approve of. But, you know, like I say to all my guys, there's certain levels, right? You got to let them relax and enjoy life and enjoy the game, because as you can see, it can be taken away from you at any moment. So I'm not quite as crazy as people might assume I am. I provide information and recognize that once in a while the boys have to let their hair down too. So he's okay to eat a little junk food, but you know, I'll be watching how much.
That's awesome. Gary, thanks so much for this. Much appreciated.
All right. Thanks, guys. Good luck, guys.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Elliot. Bye, guys. Right now, while my body's moving, I'll buy nothing the same as yesterday.
On this week's podcast, we're featuring tracks by Hembree. It's a five-piece band from Kansas City, Missouri, who recently released their first full-length record, House on Fire. Before we chatted with Gary Roberts, you heard Right Time, and now you're hearing Symmetry Lines. All right, Elliot, I want to thank Gary Roberts for stopping by the podcast. Very much looking forward to seeing that McDavid piece.
A lot of good insight there, like a lot of really good insight. And you know what it makes me say? That, you know, there's still half a season to go. Connor McDavid, he's exempt from criticism this year. Not that anybody really would be criticizing him.
Who's
anyway.
Who's going to criticize Connor McDavid?
But the point I'm saying, like, like this year, he's exempt from criticism. Exempt. To get to this and for what he had to fight to get back, don't rob any old ladies, Connor. But other than that, you're exempt from criticism.
We'll leave you with our feature band this month, Hembree. The band is currently touring across the United States with their track Culture. Here's Hembree. King of this culture, never slow down. Keep running with the vultures. They want to pull you back down so you can't get out. No, you